This is MSONewsSports.com. We're joined by Lori Ehrlich, the state rep from Marblehead, Swampscott, and parts of Lynn as well, right, Lori?
Correct. Very special parts of Lynn.
Exactly. Well, you know, there's so many things to talk about. First of all, we welcome you to MSONewsSports.com, but I guess let's get right to the issues on a few things that you're working on at the State House. Tell us about the wage gap bill you're co-sponsoring on pay equity and equal pay for equal work.
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to speak about that. This bill is called a number of things. I hear pay equity. I hear equal pay for equal work. And what it really boils down to is that women are not being paid what they're worth as compared to men. There are some really interesting statistics that really bear this out. Women, generally speaking, earn approximately 81% of what men earn. But that number gets so much lower when you look at women of color. So African American women actually earn about 66 cents for every dollar, and Latina women earn 54 cents for every dollar a man earns. So this is something that, even going back to 1945, Massachusetts led the way on just establishing pay equity. So we're coming back now in this great year of 2016 to say, well, okay, that there are some issues with the law that was passed several decades ago. We're going to just tighten it up a little bit. So this bill, this bill, which I've been proud to co-sponsor and testify in favor of and appear in press conferences, actually had a big week this week. It was endorsed by the Boston Chamber of Commerce, which is a big deal. And then it also had a unanimous vote in the Senate just yesterday, which is a big deal. Just to get every member of the Senate to agree on one issue is almost unheard of, but they did. So because it's not a money bill, it started in the Senate, and it will come to the House soon, I hope. Okay. And I look forward to voting on it and passing it.
Yeah, just to follow up on that, the implications then would be, or the tweaks of it would be, the main points of that would be?
Yeah, I think the tweak is to actually define comparable work. That ended up being a problem in how you identify, you know, comparing one job to another. But there are also some interesting tweaks that I think are really important. Right now, a person can be fired for sharing what they make for salary with a coworker. Not sharing the actual dollars, but even just telling them how much they're earning. And they can be fired over that. And that is something that just is outrageous to me. But it happens. But we're going to take care of that. There's also something in an interview. An employer would no longer be able to ask. I guess they can ask anything. You would not have to answer. Actually, no, they can't ask how much you're earning at your previous job. And that's to prevent somebody who is underpaid to begin with from perpetuating that. Yeah. So if they're underpaid to begin with, you don't want somebody to say, oh, I can get that person for less money because they're earning so much less now. So these are just, you know, little tweaks, but important ones, especially if it's you in that job position.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking this may not even be applicable now, but you remember the old job applications, you know, your work history and what you earned at that job? I mean, that was part of the questions, but it sounds like I always wondered whether that was a fair question or not, and it appears like maybe it's not a fair question.
Well, I guess that's what the bill is saying, that's no longer fair game for a job interview.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that's used now as much as it once might have been. Let's go a couple of other things to talk about. Gas leaks. You're also sponsoring a bill on that piece. Tell us about the history with that.
Yeah, last session, after 7 years' work, I was able to pass a bill that I was the lead on dealing with gas leaks, and we passed this incredible landmark legislation that deals with the infrastructure under our feet that is carrying high-pressurized gas to our homes, to our businesses. Our infrastructure is very old, and it's starting to leak. And it's leaking to the point where we have 25,000 known leaks throughout Massachusetts. Many of them are in front of people's houses, and every once in a while you hear of a house exploding. The natural gas is highly explosive, and if it comes in contact with a source of fire, it will explode, and people have been killed in the past, which certainly gets everybody's attention. But meanwhile, that gas is leaking 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and guess who's paying for that lost gas that's just floating up into the sky? we are. So my bill seeks to require that the gas companies make the repairs to those leaks that they've been tracking sometimes for three decades. There was one leak in downtown Boston right around the corner from the State House that was celebrating its 30th year of the gas companies watching it. So some really good-humored people threw a birthday party for this leak. So they brought a cake and everything and some news cameras and no candles because that would be dangerous. But just to make the point that it's time to stop watching these leaks and let's just get them repaired.
You know, and just listening to you, that seems like this is news to me. I think when you're looking out in front of your house one day, you see a guy checking for gas leaks, you say, okay, great. You know, that's, I'm glad they're doing that. But then the next question in your head is, oh, did somebody report a gas leak here?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And now what you're telling me, too, is that the gas company knows that there are lots of gas leaks, but apparently they must not reach some kind of threshold in order to fix. Is that basically it?
That is it. And yeah. If you see the gas company in front of your house, you have to ask them, are you fixing the leak? Because I've heard from so many constituents that have called in gas leaks that they come down, they check it, they say, yep, there's a gas leak, and then they leave. They're not repairing them. There's one woman who called me that she said they put a grate over the leak to air it out, but they did not fix it. So that's what they've been doing, and that's not okay.
Yeah. And I can imagine how enormous that task would be for the gas company if that's in fact with this, as you're referring to it, as the old infrastructure and so on, just a massive kind of issue. All right, let's check on a couple of other issues here. You have a bill pending that has been passed by New Jersey, New York, California, mm-hmm. regarding, maybe you can tell us, on ivory and rhino horns, whatever?
Yeah, it's a little challenging to make something that's going on pretty much in Africa relevant to voters here, but people really care, and this is an issue I've received so much attention on. Rhinos and elephants in Africa and actually in Asia too are facing extinction. Rhinos are going faster than elephants. It's estimated 5 to 10 years left of rhinos on this planet. Elephants 10 to 20 years at the rate they're being, it's called poaching. And the reason they're being poached is not because people want to eat them or people want to kill them. It's their tusks are so valuable for different things. For the rhinos, the horn of the rhino is actually ground up and it's believed in folk medicine to be an aphrodisiac. So people are actually snorting ground up rhino horn,
yeah.
And it's not that. It's the same as fingernails. It's the same material as fingernails. With elephants, we all know about ivory and what their tusks are made into. But unfortunately, as they get rarer, the value of ivory is going up.
Yeah.
Because people are collecting it, and it's consuming the elephants quicker. So I think we have to the goal of the bill is to limit trade in ivory, which not everybody loves, but it's the only way we're going to stop the poaching crisis right now.
Let me just follow up with a question. There's I can see retail trade in states that we're talking about, but is there kind of there must also be then this kind of supplier kind of trade as well. Does that make sense? Or you know,
The way I look at it is this is a state bill, but there's also a national effort to do this as well. The president has already proposed tightening up the regulations that will pretty much do the same thing that I'm doing on the state level. But we need them both because the state level bill deals with the just intrastate trade. It's the trade that's going on in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
The federal bill deals with what's being imported into the country and commerce over state lines. So they're getting it the same thing, except different avenues there.
Okay.
But there's also the global effort. The United States is the second biggest consumer or trader in ivory, only after China.
Oh.
And the two leaders, the Chinese president and the American president, got together and said, we have to do something about this.
Mm-hmm.
So in China, there isn't that messy democratic process that we all know and love. But they've already done something very deep and meaningful. And so has the U.S. So we're working together. It's very hopeful. It takes time. But my bill is just a small piece of a much larger picture.
Gotcha. All right. A couple of things here to follow up on. On Thursday, you were in Lynn for a discussion, kind of a forum on the Holocaust with some Holocaust survivors. And I know they had a story in the Lynn item on Friday on that, but you were a part of that. So tell us about that and your reaction and take on that whole forum.
Yeah, it was a great forum. Apparently, it was very well attended, but by students, yeah. The juniors and seniors at Lynn English High School were required to be there. But they were silent in those moments when you could hear a pin drop when these two survivors were talking about their experience, and the whole event just came together beautifully. We had these two survivors who are 88 and 91 years old at this point. They started a Holocaust survivors band, and they play all over the world, and they're adorable, but they've made living deliberate and, yeah. and joyful, yeah. which is great. It's a great lesson for all of us to say, live your life. Yeah. But the story is tragic, and it was the day after the Holocaust International Holocaust Remembrance Day. Yeah. And I shared with the audience this awful statistic, but really does put it into perspective. If we were to have 1 minute's moment of silence for every victim of the Holocaust, we would be silent for over 11 years. Isn't that mind-blowing? The auditorium went silent when I said that, and it was also written up in the Lynn item. But the whole day was very impactful and a good reminder about, you know, what humans are actually capable of. And, you know, there was a lot of talk about, you know, and I mentioned, you know, how dangerous demagoguery can be when people take seriously some of the things that are said as political discourse or just as discourse. Yeah. And I think it's an important reminder for all of us just to watch what we say.
Yeah, and you know, having been at similar kinds of forums, and I'm not saying similar, and really I have no idea, but similar thing. I mean, this is a generation that we're losing. You know, that survived the Holocaust, that can tell that story, and we're losing that piece. And there's, as you mentioned, it's such a defining moment, really, in the world.
Mm-hmm. And there are things we can learn from it too, that are still just as relevant today as they were back in the 1940s. So, yeah. So it's just important. That's why history is important. So if there's any kids listening, pay attention in history class because it matters. It really matters, and we all should heed history as well.
And some of these big stories, I mean, those are important stories, you know. Those clearly are big moments, and you know, to remember out of history, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. All right, maybe one last topic here, and that is you also are working on a gun bill. Now, as soon as I say that, everyone's going to say, "Whoa, gun bill, come on!" But tell us about what you have proposed, and where you are at with your gun bill.
Okay, well, this is what I see as the most common sense. Everybody can love this bill, and it's very easy to explain. It just will not allow somebody who is on the terrorist watch list or no-fly list, which is an FBI list kept, from purchasing a gun. And arming these people, if we're watching them for potential terrorist activities, it seems to make perfect common sense that we don't want to arm them. Interestingly, the Government Accountability Office came out with a report that of the people on these lists, 2,000 of them have already been armed. They have walked into gun shops and purchased guns. And the reason they know that is because when you go to do that, you are actually crossed with these lists, but the law doesn't exist to say don't sell that person a gun. So we are knowingly handing guns over to people who are being watched for terrorism. Now, these lists, you know, I'm not endorsing the lists, but still, when somebody said, well, you don't like the lists, you want to get on an airplane without them, and you realize, well, okay, you know, this is what we have, and this is what we're using, and it is there to keep us safe. You may have heard, you know, some people occasionally get on the list and their name is similar to somebody. I know Teddy Kennedy many years ago was on the list. His name was the same as somebody who really was a terrorist, and he had to get. It wasn't easy for him to get off the list. There's a much better process now available to somebody if you're accidentally on the list. All it means is you will have a delay in your ability to get a gun. There's a process you can undertake, get off the list, and then go back and buy your gun. So it seems like common sense. It has bipartisan support in the legislature. About 54 of my colleagues have co-sponsored this idea. The governor has endorsed it specifically with a letter to the editor saying, I have endorsed this bill, and tons of support in the public sphere. So, and actually the Boston Globe editorialized in favor of it as well. So I'm hopeful we can get this over the line. I think it's a good bill, common sense, and it's also been something that the federal government's been unable, Congress has been unable to do. So maybe we can show Congress how you get this done.
No, absolutely. And it sounds like things are getting done. Let me follow up. If there's 2,000 people that have purchased guns, I'm throwing this out as a cold question here, but how many people are on the terrorist watch list? Do you have any idea how many people might be on that watch list?
Yeah, there's actually, I believe, hundreds of thousands of people on the list. It's a very big, it's a comprehensive list, and there's a lot of people that, have given the federal government. The FBI is actually under Homeland Security, and there's a reason why you get on the list. You're being watched for some suspicious activity. So 2,000 out of that many may not be a lot, but it's still 2,000 armed would-be terrorists. So I think, it's a difficult topic. The list concept is difficult, but it's what we have. And it's, when I get on a plane, I'm actually glad it's there. And I would like these people not to be armed as well. So.
Yeah, I'm with you. I want searches. I want background checks. I don't care. I'm with you on that. And I think that shouldn't even be a debate in this day and age. All right, Representative Ehrlich, anything else you'd like to share with us? It's been great talking with you.
No, but I'm so glad to know that you're out there doing the show, and I look forward to visiting with you again sometime soon.
Okay. Laurie Ehrlich, the state rep from Swampscott, Marblehead, and parts of Lynn, here with us on MSONewsSports.com.